Good afternoon. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is the soundtracker, Gordon Hempton from Port Angeles, Washington. Welcome, Gordon.
Oh, thank you, Will. It's great to be on the show.
Sound can be healing or injurious, and you know both potentials.
Yes, there are good sounds and there are bad sounds. Generally, the good sounds are what we enjoy listening to, like music or perhaps the laughter of our children, sounds that make us feel good. And then the bad sounds is basically comes under the category of noise pollution. And while we don't understand everything about noise pollution, we do know today there's over 5,000 medical research articles that document the deleterious effects of noise below that which damages our hearing. So I'm an acoustic ecologist, and my work is to listen to places, the messages that animals, including ourselves, send out into the environment, how it travels through the environment, and who's listening.
I know you make the point that fighting noise is not the same as preserving silence, and it really does nothing to help us reconnect and listen to the land. What do you mean when you say the land speaks?
Well, the land definitely is speaking. There's no question about that. In fact, I have some samples that I'll play for you that I think speaks to all of us. Isn't it amazing, for example, that when we listen to birdsong, that it sounds like music? It's music to our ears, and that reveals to us our deeper ecology, that we actually came from this planet. Well, in the last 30 years that I've been seeking out places on the planet that are relatively free of noise pollution, and I've heard them become increasingly more scarce, and all these messages add up to one big message, and that is Earth is a solar-powered jukebox.
Yes.
And in simplest terms, that means the more sunlight that falls on the surface of the Earth, the louder the Earth plays. And if I can, just for a moment, I'd like to play for you several samples from planet Earth, beginning in the Amazon rainforest, where we have maximum sunlight and maximum loudness.
All right.
And if we jump now just a little bit further north to Central America in Belize, we can hear that it's still fairly loud. A lot of solar energy is reaching into the canopy, powering this bioacoustic system. And it's when we jump all the way to Georgia that we begin to notice a big change. And then finally, to my home state of Washington. And that's one of the reasons why I live in the state of Washington, because there's just the right amount of solar energy, not just about the sound, but it's about how the sound behaves in that space, and it's basically what I refer to as a poetic of space.
And you particularly value both the quiet and the music of the Olympic National Park, and you have a project there to protect virtually the whole park.
Yes, I am the founder of the One Square Inch of Silence Foundation, and our mission there is to have Olympic National Park become the world's first quiet place. Well, can you believe there is not yet one place set aside off limits to noise pollution where we can simply listen to the earth?
You know, too much noise and I lose my clarity and I can't hear who I am.
Yeah, you can't hear who you are. And part of the research shows that in noisy environments that people exhibit antisocial behavior. As the noise pollution increases in our lives, we also show less of a willingness to help others when they're in distress, but simply seem to walk by that. We tend to be in our own little world and disconnecting with the environment, which is one of the beauties of going to a quiet place like Olympic National Park, where the noise-free interval, and that's the modern measure of quiet, can last for hours, and you can just be where you are, that it awakens a tremendous sense of security, curiosity, and wonder, and love. And it's no surprise either, because if we look at the range of human hearing, we discover that the human ear is actually tuned like a musical instrument, that there's a certain bandwidth where we have super sensitive hearing, and that's between 2.5 kilohertz and 5 kilohertz, and those are the resonant frequencies of the auditory canal. Now, back to the acoustic ecology, if we're to study humans as we would study any other form of wildlife, that to me says that there's something out there in our ancestors' environment, in that 2.5 to 5 kilohertz range, that our ancestors simply had to hear to give a better advantage in their survival.
And we want to hear what that is, but
sure.
Along the way, Gordon.
Yes.
I want to also catch us up to the reality we're in.
Sure.
And you have said when you're out in the Ho River Valley at the site of One Square Inch of Silence,
yes.
and a jet plane intrudes,
right.
You have to remember not to be led by anger. And I think there's a relationship between noise and my emotional stability and my anger and aggression. And
right.
I think you've reflected on that some. Say a little bit about it, because
sure.
That's the consequences of what we're trying to save and what we're also watching we're losing.
Right. Oh, and I can give you an excellent example of how quiet worked for me just last week. I went on a hike to One Square Inch and spent a couple days in the rainforest, and it was just raining cats and dogs the whole time, except it let up while I pitched a tent, and then I was able to go on to the One Square Inch site, this place that I've been defending from all noise pollution and trying to bring as much publicity so others can help me save it too. And I got to the One Square Inch site, and as you know, in Earth Day 2005, I placed a stone, approximately 1 square inch in size, on a moss-covered log, and that is the area that I am defending from all noise pollution. This stone was given to me by David Fourlines, the cultural elder who is now passed on of the Quileute tribe who lives nearby. And someone had gone to the site and removed that stone, removed the many stones that visitors from all over the world had placed beside it, because it's become almost a spiritual shrine of silence in the rainforest. And so there I was, suddenly shocked by somebody who could hike 3.2 miles through the world's tallest trees and not be inspired by those miracles, and not let go of their anger, that somebody would try to create a place off limits to aircraft. And they cleaned out the site. So I sat there. I realized, yes, I could become angry. I can feel it upwelling like a volcano inside of me. But I took my thoughts outside of my head and just listened to the quiet. I looked up into the misty sky and the treetops 300 feet overhead, and I just said to myself quietly, I'll let the quiet do the thinking for me. I sat there in quiet for 20 minutes, and the quiet did do its thinking for me. I felt the love and wonder. You cannot feel love and wonder and be angry at the same time. And I realized the rock was simply a symbol of the quiet that still remains and the quiet that can still be defended. And I simply took a few steps, picked up a river stone, and placed it on top of the log and continue. Had I been in a city and suddenly discovered that somebody had vandalized a shrine and been exposed to all the noise of the urban environment, I think I would have done some real ranting, but I didn't. I love quiet. Quiet inspires me. Quiet powers me and allows me to do what I do today.
And sound and silence and the forest and the birds is mysterious in that we can't see it. It's this invisible wave traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what you say, that it's not the absence of something, but the presence of everything.
Yes, it's the presence of everything.
And it nurtures our nature and lets us know who we are, our higher self, as you found when you dealt with your anger and got enough clarity not to be destructive yourself.
Right. The fact that sound is invisible, I think, is something that adds extraordinary value to our lives. There's evidence now in archaeology, for example, that cave paintings are not simply done in random places within the cave, but that where those paintings that show staggered images of game animals are places of special acoustics where the echoes repeat themselves. And the current theory is that the primitive people that put those paintings on the walls actually considered it to be a connection with the spiritual world. And even today in the Hoh Valley, when you're just sitting there in the rain, listening, I feel deeply connected with the spirit of life. I have great optimism for the future of this planet. And I have no doubts whatsoever that even though these are difficult global environmental times, that it's also a very exciting time because we get to make conscious choices. And I believe in a quiet place, those choices are very clear.
And much easier than in a noisy, frenzied environment. This is William Evans. We're shifting gears, and I'm speaking with the soundtracker, Gordon Hempton, about silence, listening, and the sounds of nature. Tell us about what really we are tuned to listen to, Gordon.
Well, it's really clear when we examine the range of human hearing that the ear is tuned, similar to a musical instrument, in that it doesn't hear all frequencies evenly, that we have supersensitive hearing in a very narrow bandwidth, and that this bandwidth does coincide with sounds in our environment. Now, audiologists, scientists who study human hearing, they have long considered that our ears evolve to hear the human voice. But if that is true, and it may be, we would be the first species on planet Earth to have evolved with so much self-importance and so independently from the risks that are out there in the natural world. So for the sake of our own exploration and reconsidering that we're part of the ecology of this planet, what in our environment matches our peak human hearing sensitivity? And immediately, it's this. This is a willy wagtail singing for its mate on the Australian outback. Our ears are tuned to hear birdsong. And let's listen for a moment what Willy has to say.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Now the message that I get from Willy, it has to not only reveal its physical location to a potential mate, but also to all potential predators. And the message that I get from Willy is that love and risk are inseparable. But now let's
all
just,
right.
Yeah, I need that encouragement from Willy in my life. Now, to go on, though, to the larger question, why would our distant and evolving ancestors need to hear birdsong from a great distance in order to better survive?
For a survival purpose.
For a survival purpose. Well, imagine yourself, Will, now instead of 2011, let's go back thousands of years where you're a member of a small nomadic tribe. There are 12 of us in the group. You and I belong to this group. There are women, children, other males. We've run low on food and resources, and that's the whole reason why it's time for us to move on again. So in our journey, in our search for a new homeland, we reach a mountain ridgetop, and now we have a choice between two valleys. One to the right, it's beautiful, it's green, and we hear nothing. It is absolutely silent. There is no information. So now we look at our other choice and remember that our choice is very important. We're low on provisions. It might determine whether we prosper or perish. Now we look at the other valley, and it is also equally green and beautiful, but we can barely make out birdsong because that matches our peak sensitivity. And if the birds are singing, it means that there's a food base, there's water, and there's extended favorable season for the birds to raise the young from the nest. Bird song is the prime indicator of habitats prosperous to humans.
And we need habitats that are prosperous to humans and all life, because it's hard to find amid the noise.
It is, and we should remember, too, not only is it difficult for us to hear birdsong when there's noise pollution, but birds don't have an indoor place to carry on their conversations, that they require a clean acoustic environment in order to communicate.
And when that disappears, is that part of the reason the birds are disappearing?
That is one of the contributing reasons why the birds are disappearing, and in my opinion, in the last several decades where we've had a huge crescendo of fossil fuel consumption, and by the way, fossil fuel is really ancient sunlight, so our solar power jukebox is just continuing to play, but with ancient sunlight, that as that crescendo has increased, American songbirds have decreased 25%.
Wow.
And some species, such as the bobwhite quail, have seen a free fall of 80%.
My goodness. I used to hear those all the time when I went with my dad by the river.
Oh, sure. Bob, through the forest. It was one of the songs I remember as I took the footpath through the woods that is now Connecticut Avenue in Washington, D.C., on my way to elementary school.
Wow. So our loss of quiet is not just literally a loss of awareness, but it's a loss of options, healthy options.
It is. It's a loss of option, but the greatest loss of quiet is our freedom to truly think. Quiet is a place where you can go and really fathom what are the choices in a new and creative way. And in that way, I really believe when someone asks me, well, that seems kind of highbrow that you want to preserve natural quiet when we shouldn't we preserve the endangered species as much as we can first, reduce the carbon footprint first? There are all these other things that are more important. And I say, no, actually, this is important for two reasons. One is that we need quiet to fall back in love with planet Earth, simply to be there, get rid of, let that to-do list just evaporate off our brains and be glad to be alive and just take joy from the living things around us. And second of all, we need quiet because it's going to allow us to think in new ways and understand that all these other environmental problems aren't problems in and of themselves, but really symptoms of leading a lifestyle that in many ways is toxic.
Yes, because what I hear from what you've said today, Gordon, is that if I want to have healthy options, I've got to have an adequate level of quiet and calmness and peace in my life, or I'm just driven by my anger and aggression and fear.
Yes. And that, I think, is the primary indicator. If we were to ask ourselves, how overdue am I for quiet? Ask yourself next time you're angry, when's the last time you were in a truly quiet place in nature? And that is becoming more and more difficult today to find a quiet place in nature. You know, Will, there are only 12 places left in the United States where it's possible to have simply the sounds in nature unintruded upon by human-caused noise for 15 minutes or longer during daylight hours. If we had just one piece of legislation that would make our most important national parks with wilderness areas off-limits to aircraft, no flight zones, we would immediately have a quiet places preservation system. By the way, at a cost of less than a dollar per ticketed passengers that would have flown over there and less than a minute in total travel time. So there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't have this and preserve such a precious natural resource. And if we can't do that, I can't believe for a minute that we're going to reduce carbon, that we're going to save endangered species. There seems to be a culture that pilots and the whole aviation industry has developed called freedom of the skies, where they simply do not want to be fenced in and out of national parks. So there's great resistance here. But I have to remind pilots that are out there, and by the way, I have gotten some very good letters from pilots who strongly support quiet places, that the roots of quiet places were established in 1989 when the Charles A. Lindbergh Fund awarded the preservation of nature sounds in Washington State, the purchase price of the Spirit of St. Louis, a symbolic amount that represents something much more than just an interesting project, but something that supports Lindbergh's vision of the advancement of technology balanced with a reverence for nature. You know, it's not our ears that evolved to hear the human voice, but to listen to the natural world around us.
The need to listen and the need for quiet and the sounds of nature is on the same level for healthy humans as food and water and air.
Yes, I like to think of it as vitamin Q, vitamin quiet.
All right. Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you, Will.
This is William Evans. I've been speaking with the soundtracker, Gordon Hempton. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.